Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And we have made it to Friday once again. Welcome to the Three Martini Lunch. And Jim, after a week of Congress very appropriately stopping regular legislative business other than a resolution condemning the violence in Arizona and offering a tribute to the victims, it looks as though the Republicans realize that work is still yet to be done. They were put in power for a reason in the House, and they are going to move forward with a debate that might have a slightly different tone, but nonetheless moving forward on one of their critical campaign promises, and that's to repeal the president's health care plan, which passed in just the most obnoxious way possible last year. So kudos, I believe, to Boehner and Cantor and company to move forward with what the public elected them to do.
Amen. They handled this just right, meaning that this week was clearly going to be occupied by a memorial service. I think it's, you know, something shocking and horrible happens. There's nothing wrong with taking some time to pause and stop and reflect and mourn and do everything that was done this week. But life goes on. The business of government goes on. And, you know, Republicans were elected to Congress to do something, even if it's going to never come to the floor, thanks to Harry Reid. Once again, way to go, Nevada. And, you know, even if Obama is making a million and one veto threats, you know, this is what they were sent here to do. So after an appropriate pause, you should, you know, continue on forward. I've heard some Democrats complaining about the fact that job killing is in the title.
Is that violent language
now?
No,
job killing that'll trigger another massacre, as you all know. Words make people do things. Whereas if you called it the job eliminating bill, nothing terrible would ever happen again. Never mind that the health care bill was called, was it the patient protection and
affordable choice or something?
Crap Skittles Act or something. You know, I mean, everything gets these ridiculous, acronyms and hyperbolic titles to begin with. So the idea that, you know, job killing is something wildly out of decorum or something is kind of a rather silly complaint. We've already seen one member of Congress saying that they should take those adjectives out of the bill title for Gabby.
Right.
We're going to hear that a lot over the coming weeks, that everything should be done on behalf of Giffords. Have the debate. Have the vote. We know how this is going to end. Go forward with it and, take things from there.
Jim, just as a small prediction here, on a percentage basis, how much of the Democratic opposition do you think will center around the fact that they believe this is the wrong time for this and doesn't respect the change of tone atmosphere in Washington? How much will actually be based on actual policy content?
You know, you'll hear a great deal of that. My guess is that if you're one of these red state Democrats who survived the 2010 midterms, you probably aren't going to be invoking a great deal of that. I mean, you know, obviously, we haven't seen a lot of House Democrats signing on for repeal. A couple of the usual suspects like Boren, and probably see some of the folks from North Carolina going that way. My guess is you'll see more than a handful, and you'll see a bunch voting no, but they want to, you know, like giving kind of conditional, well, I don't want to repeal the whole thing, but I want to take out X, Y, and Z. I think you're going to see a bunch of House Democrats realizing that Obamacare is just not a political winner, that the public opinion hasn't moved or changed in their direction on this, and that this is not – they're in anything resembling a district that could go red, that they really don't want to be tied to this any more than they have to.
On to martini number two now. Here's Colorado Democratic Senator Mark Udall, who believes that one of the keys to changing the tone in Washington is sitting Republican-Democrat, kind of like boy-girl in elementary school, in order to make everybody get along a little better. Here's what he had to say in a rather poor audio connection on Thursday with MSNBC.
It just struck me as the best way to keep faith with those heroes and heroines in Arizona and those who lost their lives, and particularly Christina Green, would be to present a different face to the country. And it just seems like it's an idea that whose time has come.
Now, I'm not going to dismiss the idea of having friends on the other side of the aisle. I think that's fine. I think it's good to have civil discussions and extended discussions, open, honest discussions about policy differences. And if you can find common ground, great. But the idea that sitting together in a State of the Union message is going to change the fact that this administration and the previous Congress absolutely trampled over the rights and the liberties of the American people, and is going to change the fact that there's a massive chasm of ideologies between these two parties and the way they want to take this country, is very simplistic in my mind.
Well, the first thing, Greg, I want to note is that I do have to salute the congressman for doing that interview from a constituent meeting, apparently held in the dark side of the moon, it seems, judging by the audio quality.
Exactly.
He bounced off of three different satellites to get that through there. You can tell his heart is pretty much in the right place. But once again, having, you know, rolled my eyes at the invocation of doing something for Gabby, saying, let's do this for the slain 9-year-old. is going to get real tired real quick. And the idea that somehow the appropriate tribute to a absolutely horrific tragedy is to change the seating arrangement. right. So I'm just reminded of changing the deck chairs on the Titanic. I just don't see this. Look, if somebody wants to sit with the other side, go right ahead. I don't think this is going to have an enormous one. Instead of having one side of the room applauding and the other side not, you're just going to have every other seat applauding, effectively. I think that's the only major difference. Maybe you'll get a few like rude glares when someone applauds or fails to applaud. I'm not really sure that that's going to dramatically change this, unless we could like pick the people who we – like Alan West and sit him right next to Nancy Pelosi. Maybe that gets interesting. Maybe if you take some of the folks who are the most passionate on each side and put them right next to each other, well, then maybe it kind of turns into a little bit of drama just to see who can remain on their best behavior for the duration of the speech.
I think so. I think the president loves this idea because no matter what he says, most likely you're going to have people all over the room standing up and applauding. So this is a goldmine for him.
And for that matter, I guess you might see some lawmakers just applauding out of habit. If the person on both sides of them is applauding, you know, that will dramatically expand the size of government. Yeah! Oh, wait, I'm opposed to that. Whoa. All right, sorry. I just saw everybody else standing up, and I, you know. It's worth noting, if there's one thing we want to change about the State of the Union, the obviously the most dramatic bit of last year's was when Obama pretty much denounced the Supreme Court to their faces. And every Democrat jumped up and hooted and hollered. And apparently the great outrage was Justice Alito shaking his head and saying, not true.
Yes.
And apparently he had broken decorum and he was the out of control, frothing at the mouth, rabid dog who probably triggered Tucson with his uncouth outburst. I think it's unwise for Obama to call out anybody in the audience. I think that was just a exceptionally bad call on his part. I think it's unreasonable to expect Alito to just stand there and, let the president lie about the decision and, not expect any reaction on his part. And not that we will ever see Supreme Court Justice Jim Garrity, but I think, rotten fruit under the table might have gotten thrown. I can't imagine handling it as well as Alito did. So my guess is that if we kind of could like avoid the use of the State of the Union of a partisan point scoring exercise. I realize I'm really thinking kumbaya and ridiculous.
On to the third martini now, and this is probably one of the least bizarre ones we've had, but we've kind of made fun of the folks that will probably announce very early this year for their 2012 presidential bid. Well, that time has arrived.
Today, I'm announcing the creation of a presidential exploratory committee.
And that's Herman Cain, the former chairman of Godfather's Pizza, ran for Senate in Georgia back in 2004. He is obviously now testing the waters very seriously for a Republican bid. And the only thing really bizarre, in my opinion here, Jim, because I talked with him quite a bit when he was a Senate candidate, is the timing of this. It seems like a little early, although for a more obscure figure like him, it probably gives him a little bit of time to raise his profile. I really like Herman Cain. I think this guy brings a lot of serious ideas. He's actually accomplished something in the real world, which is different than a lot of different politicians who are making policy right now in Washington. I have to think he's probably an underdog all the way through this thing, but I love the fact that he's in there and influencing the debate. I think he's a great addition.
Yeah, Greg, one of the things you will love the interview I conducted with him yesterday. It is transcribed and I believe currently sitting in the editor's hands and hopefully will be up on NRO. Perhaps by the time people listen to this podcast, hopefully in the not too distant future, I agree with your assessment, although I think if we're saying, the bizarre martini, if you just phrase it, the first major Republican to announce his interest in running for president in 2012 is the former CEO of Godfather's Pizza.
Yeah.
That sentence by itself kind of gets it. He told me yesterday there's a very deliberate strategy to this, that in that 2004 run when he was running for Senate, the other candidates had about a year's head start on him. And, they locked up fundraising, they locked up donors, they locked up support. And so this is kind of applying the lesson of that 2004 bid. Worth noting, because I'm hearing some people describe, oh, well, here comes our Alan Keyes, here comes the guy who's going to, be very entertaining and make some great points that isn't necessarily going to get anywhere. Herman Cain can make a very, very articulate and compelling conservative argument, particularly in the field of economics and business and even branching out into national security and illegal immigration. And he doesn't give off any whiff of crazy. If you compare him to Alan Keyes, I don't see him calling Vice President Cheney's daughter a selfish hedonist at any particular moment. So I think once you put this guy up on stage with everybody else, I could see him making a splash. Now, whether that splash means doing well in the Ames straw poll or doing well in the Iowa caucuses or where it is, I don't quite know how big that splash gets. But, you know, I think that one of the big problems for him is that, you know, right now, very, very few folks have heard of him. And once those debates start occurring and once people start tuning in, they will have heard of him and they'll have some appearances to assess him on. And I'll be very surprised if those appearances don't do him a bunch of good. Now, does this put him on par with, you know, Palin, Huckabee, Romney, Gingrich and Mitch Daniels and Tim Pawlenty and all the rest? Probably not. And it's going to be a little, you know, like I said, a very tough climb for him. But keep your eye on him. But by the end of this process, I think a lot of people will come out of this thinking very highly of Herman Cain.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. Jim, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
Craig, I can't wait for a week that doesn't include shootings.
Let's hope that that's true. Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.